In the second Aliyah of Parshas Vayigash, Yehuda, continuing his encounter with Yosef, makes reference to the fact that he has taken on special responsibility for Binyamin, ki avdecha arav esanar. And as we discussed in the previous parsha, this notion of his taking on arvus responsibility, which Rashi explains here, niskasharti bekesher chazak, I have bonded with a strong connection. This serves, at least according to one opinion in the Gemara in the end of Bava Basra, as the basis for the monetary concept of arvus, of being a cosigner, a guarantor on a loan, of the notion that if you vouch for someone else who's borrowing money, you become liable to pay should that person default. And it's a topic of debate in the Gemara over there, but at least according to the first opinion, Rav Huna, that halacha of arvus is derived from this statement of Yehuda. And the Lubavitch Rebbe, in one of his sichos, explains what exactly the nature of the machlokas is there in the Gemara. Why is it that Rav Huna locates this din in this pasuk, and other opinions feel that we have to look elsewhere for the source? And he suggests that perhaps the issue may be, what exactly is the nature of the commitment of the Arev? Now perhaps Rav Huna is understanding that the Arev actually stands in the place of the borrower completely, for all intents and purposes in this context, and therefore the reference to Yehuda's complete association with Binyamin, this idea of Iskasharti Bekesher Chazak, becomes relevant. While the other opinion in the Gemara understands the role of the Arev much more limited, it's simply a obligation to repay the debt, but doesn't reflect this complete identification that Yehuda is referencing here. He goes on to suggest further that perhaps there is also a question here as to what exactly is the basis for the concept of Arev. And perhaps Rav Huna is understanding that the idea is connected to Yehuda's statement because it's also part of a broader theme in Torah and Halacha, the idea of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bazeh. And this is a notion that we find, for example, the idea that one can be motzi someone else in brachos and mitzvos, even if they themselves have already fulfilled the mitzvah, because the need of someone else to fulfill that mitzvah keeps the first person's obligation alive and allows them to perform that mitzvah on their behalf. And that's a reflection of this idea of arvus, and this is a notion that we have both halachically and hashkafically throughout the Torah. So perhaps the concept of monetary arvus is also a reflection of that. While the other opinion of the Gemara might understand that the idea of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bazeh is only for spiritual matters, for mitzvos and for tochacha, for rebuke and the like, but not necessarily for technical monetary matters. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe goes on to suggest that this could also be explained further by trying to understand what we mean by the concept of arvus. And he suggests that if we look at arvus as reflecting the idea that the entire Jewish people make up one entity, one body, there are many different levels to that unity. On the one hand, there is the idea that the complete integrity of the body is dependent on the fact that it has all of its components. There is also the idea that we recognize that all the components complete each other and are necessary for each other. And then beyond that, there is the idea that each component understands that it is part of one unified purpose and one unified goal. So when we compare the arvus of the Jewish people to those three ideas of a complete body, so you find that they reflect themselves in parallel ways. First, the idea that the shlemus of Klal Yisrael is only when it includes all the different categories and all the different levels. And beyond that, the idea that all of the different components of Klal Yisrael need each other and complete each other and complement each other. And beyond that, that the perspective of the Jewish people is that all of them are equally important and unified towards a common goal. And perhaps that is why it's specifically Yehuda who was able to take on responsibility for Binyamin, in that Yehuda was the melech among the Shvatim, he was the king, and the idea of the king is that he serves as the unifying component of the entire nation. And therefore, Rav Huna specifically is able to understand this din of arvus from the commitment of Yehuda to Binyamin. this possibility of extending the unification of the Jewish people even to monetary matters comes from the fact that it is the deepest type of connection that expresses itself throughout. And the Rebbe went on to say that perhaps this has extra meaning considering the fact that Parshas Vayigash is so often read, as it is this week, the week of Asara B'Teves. And that is a time when we focus on the siege that Nebuchadnezzar imposed on Yerushalayim. And that siege forced the people of Yerushalayim to be placed together in a sense of imposed achdus. And that was a form of putting the cure before the disease, that we know that the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, and this symbolic achdus is a way of saying that this is what we need in order to remedy that Sinas Chinam that causes the destruction. And we could also supplement that idea by noting that Rav Shlomo Fisher, in his drashos, has a theory about the initial Aveira of Mechiras Yosef, where he notes that the Tanesim that we have, the four Tanesim that commemorate aspects of the Chorban, correspond to these stages of the Chorban Habayis, but we also have a tradition that they correlate to stories in Chumash. So, for example, the Chet HaMeraglim took place on Tisha B'Av, and that's what started the entire cycle. So Rav Shlomo Fisher poses the question, what is it that happened on Asara B'Teves in Chumash itself? And he suggests that it could be that the Avera of Mechiras Yosef actually happened on Asara B'Teves. And if so, that helps to underscore this idea that here this paradigmatic Avera ben Adam L'Chavero that represents all the ways in which people can mistreat each other. This took place on this day of Asara B'Teves, which now manifests itself as a fast day in which we are forced to reconsider the obligation of Achdus and find ways in which we can fix this Avera that causes us to separate from each other. And speaking of reconsidering and Tochacha, so there is a fascinating statement of Chazal concerning Pasuk Gimel in Perek Mem Hei here, going a little bit further, that when Yosef finally reveals himself to his brothers, the Pasuk tells us, he says, Vayomer Yosef Elechav, Ani Yosef, Haod Avichai. I am Yosef, is my father still alive? Lo Yochlu Echav La'anososo, Ki Nivhalu Mipanav. And his brothers couldn't respond because they were completely blown away. And the Gemara in Mesachas Chagiga, and Daf Dalet Amid Beis, the Medrash tells us that this was unbelievable in its effect on the brothers, and we are told, Oy lanu miyom hadin, oy lanu miyom hatochacha, that woe is to us, we have to seriously worry about what's going to happen when we have to face judgment and tochacha, because here Yosef was almost the youngest of the brothers, and look what terrible effect he had on his brothers with his tochacha. Imagine what is waiting for us. And it's a very difficult comment because we don't see here at all any statement of Musar. There's no tochacha. All he does is identify himself and ask how his father's doing, ask is his father still alive. So where is the tochacha? Where is the Musar? And there are many different explanations to this medrash in the Svarim, and all of them have tremendous insight into the messages of Chazal. So among them, the Tarat Tamima and the Netziv understand that the Musar is in the question. Is the father still alive? How could he possibly have survived how you treated him, what you put him through? How could it be that he could still be alive? And in that sense, it was Musar. There is another perspective that was offered by Rav Pam, the great Rosh Yeshiva of Tara V'Das, where he suggests there is actually tremendous Musar in this experience, because there is a future that should give us much pause when we think about what it holds for us. The Gemara talks about someone who was able to see the future world, and he referred to it as an Olam Hafuch, that it's an upside-down world, because those who are very prominent in this world will be on the bottom in the next world, and those who are on the bottom of this world will be prominent in the next world. Yonu l'mata v'tachtonim l'mala. And he understands the message of that Gemara to be that the biggest mussar one can receive is when he gets a sense of what it would be like if the world really was fair. We often complain that the world isn't fair, but very often we benefit from the fact that the world isn't fair because we're treated better than we deserve to be treated. And if we get a sense of what it would be like if we actually were treated as we deserve to be treated, and the fact that very often people who deserve to be treated better are not actually given the stature that they deserve, and that's what's waiting for when the world actually is fair in order to be sorted out, that's a tremendous mussar to point to us how we have to make sure that we actually do earn the stature that we have. So here you have the brothers who thought that Yosef was just a little brat, and they treated him disrespectfully, and they could dismiss his dreams, and now he's in charge, and he's revealed to be the one who has control over him. This is Tachtonim Lamala. This is the ones who are on the bottom, and now on the top. This is a glimpse of what the future holds. That's a tremendous mussar that has an incredible power to witness. There are other explanations as well. Perhaps the one that's most often quoted is that of the Beis Halevi. And the Beis Halevi points to the fact that there is a perhaps hypocrisy here in what Yehuda is saying, that Yehuda is coming to Yosef and telling him, you have to let Binyamin go because this is going to have a terrible impact on our father. How is Yaakov going to be able to survive being deprived of his beloved young son here? To which Yosef responds, really? You're so concerned? You're so worried about what's going to happen to your father if he's deprived of his beloved son? Well, guess what? Ani Yosef, Or Avichai, I'm the Yosef who you took away from him. Did he survive that? If he survived that, then how could you be so worried that he's not going to survive that? And being confronted with just how much you are guilty of that which you accuse others of and that you pretend to care about is, of course, an extremely powerful tochacha and mussar. There are other explanations as well. Rav Shach was quoted in the Sefer Ohel Moshe as pointing to another idea that's also associated with the Beis Halevi that has to do with the expression din v'cheshbon. Why do we have both concepts that someday we're going to have to give an accounting in the sense of din, we're going to have to pay for our averos, and there's also going to be a cheshbon in the sense of a literal accounting. And he suggests that when we have to pay the price for our averos, there will be the avera itself, and there also will be the cheshbon. The cheshbon is the calculation that we made that told us that it was a good idea to follow this path. And when we realize just how off that calculation was, that's also a powerful mussar. So here, the brothers thought that Yosef had these dreams of ruling over them and that they will thwart him by selling him into slavery. And that was their consideration and their calculation. And now all of a sudden they realize that what they did resulted in him ruling over them. So their whole calculation of why they got involved in this plan in the first place ended up having the opposite result. So not only was it an avera, but the cheshbon itself was quite a mistake. And along similar lines, the Rav Shiva of Karmbiavner, Rav Goldwicht, and others explain that the cheshbon here is the recognition that your whole premise is wrong. And that's itself a tremendous source of busha, of embarrassment, that when you think that you're doing something for a reason, and then you recognize that that reason is itself a mistake, so there is tremendous mussar in that. So they thought that Yosef was wrong, that he was deluded, that he had these perceptions of grandeur, that he would become a king, and that he was incorrect, and he was just a dreamer in the literal sense. And now they see that he was right all along, and they recognize that they were completely mistaken in all of their assessment. That is, once again, a very powerful sense of mussar and tochacha. And perhaps we can add one more idea, maybe a little bit alpi derech hadrush on top of the drush, but maybe there is also a warning here about Lashon Hara and Busha and the power of speech and how careful we have to be in how we talk and how we address others, especially in sensitive moments. And the Medrash is telling us that here Yosef, the youngest of the brothers, was saying something so mild in such a subtle way, and yet the brothers were completely blown away. If we try to rebuke someone and we're not careful, imagine what kind of a humiliation we might impose. And maybe in that sense, al pi darach hadrosh, oylanu miyom haden, oylanu miyom hatochacha, when we try to give tochacha to others, we could get ourselves in terrible trouble, as the Gemara in Maseches Erechin tells us about the pasuk. The mandate of tochacha contains the words v'lo sisa lav chet, that you should not get yourself in trouble, incur an aveira through doing it. Yachal yishtan et panav, says the Gemara, you might think that you could do so in a way that inflicts embarrassment, and the pasuk says lo sisa lav chet, we have to be careful not to cause an aveira for ourselves. And perhaps the Medrash is also telling us that here we have to be aware of the power of our language in the moment of rebuke and just how much humiliation that can inflict and how much damage that can cause. And that's also a part of the context here, that we find that Yosef had sent away all of his bodyguards before revealing himself to his brothers, and there's a discussion in the Medrash about why he did that and whether he was wise in doing so, because indeed he exposed himself to danger. They could have decided that they would kill him or hurt him and run away, and he did this in order to avoid embarrassing them. And it's a very powerful message of just how vulnerable people are at the moment of rebuke and how careful one has to be in recognizing that. Several very crucial and powerful messages here about the power and impact of Mussar and Tochacha.